Hey everyone, this is Bev Marshall here, and I've had the honor and privilege of being married to Drew Marshall for almost 20 years. 12 of the best years of my life. Have you ever noticed just how sensitive of a man he is?
I was crying with him when he was crying because...
Hey, hold on. We were crying. We're men here.
He may not know how to fix stuff around the house, but at least he knows women's fashion.
Is it the way women are dressing? I mean, I know I'm going to be labeled sexist by even suggesting this. You know, we can wear whatever we want. Well, I got to tell you, there's a lot of skimpy-looking stuff out there.
I know he thinks he's Dr. Phil and genuinely seems like he understands us women.
Women seem to be driven more by emotions than men do, and men tend to be a little bit more analytical. And I'm not a sexist jerk, so don't write me emails saying I hate women or something like that.
But don't worry, ladies. I've trained him well.
Driving, turning your radio down, and talking on the phone. You must be a woman, because a guy couldn't do all that.
So if you're looking for sound professional guidance, well, there's always the guests he interviews. Tune in Saturdays between 1 and 5 for The Drew Marshall Show, right here on Joy 1250.
You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Well, that was a close one, folks. We were trying to reach our next guest, and Tal Prince is down somewhere in the backwoods of Louisiana or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
The phone lines were not working properly, so we had to call him on his mobile phone, but we got him. I think he's still there. Tal, you still there?
Yeah, I'm in the North Georgia mountains, so I'm trying to avoid people with banjos and canoes.
Yeah. Listen, Tal, thank you so much for joining us. You and I were put together by a gentleman named Larry Ross a little while ago. Larry has been Billy Graham's publicist for, I think, 30 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And he put the two of us on the phone together, and we just kind of clicked.
Yeah, we did. That was a good time.
Now, folks, the website you got to know about right off the bat is talprincelive.com. You've just started this radio show thing of your own. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, this has been a strange thing for us because I've got no radio experience. Well, I didn't. Now I've got a whopping 4 hours. So
Ooh,
I'm a seasoned, you know, a seasoned pro. And so I'm thinking about changing the show to an advice show on how to do radio.
Yeah.
But, it's just kind of a Pharisee-free zone, you know, a place where anybody can call and talk about whatever issues that they struggle with, you know, because I'm a guy who got hooked very early on in my life on pornography and just didn't feel I could ever say anything to anybody about that, didn't feel like I could get help, and so I just kind of suffered in silence for a very long time, and the church was unfortunately about the last place that I felt I could ever say anything. I just was sure they would toss me out, and I think, sadly, that's true in a lot of places. So we're just trying to provide a safe haven for fellow strugglers on the airwaves to talk, and we're on Sirius Satellite on Sunday nights on Channel 161, so we broadcast through Canada as well, so it's great to be there.
Good for you. I understand coming up on your show, a tremendous guest, probably one of the biggest celebrities you've ever had on your show.
This is absolutely correct, and I don't know how in the world we pulled it off. It's one of these miracles of radio, but next Sunday night on April the 6th, Drew Marshall will be on the show. So,
Drew, you're such a knob.
Any chance I can get, baby. Any chance I can get. Here's a quote from the man himself, Tal Prince. By honestly acknowledging what was going on in my life, I've been able to move forward toward transformation. That's what Tal Prince Live is really about, transformation through openness and transparency. God always uses the unlikely to accomplish his purposes, and I'm definitely that. I used to always fear that I was unlikable. Now, I know I'm just unlikely. Great quote, Tal. Great quote.
Oh, thank you, man. Every once in a while, I come up with a lucid thought.
You're a step ahead on Drew.
Every once in a while. Joining us on the show today, co-hosting, is Tim Miller. And, Tim, you know, you and I had a pretty serious chat.
Yeah.
Was it last year about your addiction to pornography?
A couple of years ago, actually, yeah. The first time I was on, it was like maybe three, maybe four years ago with my wife.
So, interesting, we've got both you guys in the studio here. And look, I think every male, if we're honest with ourselves, look, maybe not every male, but most of us, struggle with that issue. I said to a guy, I was out in Calgary at the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association meeting, and you're at a hotel, and you're by yourself, and you got the internet there. And the next breakfast, I said to the guys at the table, that's how open I am, I said, guys, I can't believe how hard it was not to look at pornography in my hotel room last night. And they just went, there was crickets at the conversation. They just shut down,
man. The crickets of conviction.
I like that.
That's a good name for a boy band, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, Christian boy band.
Why not?
So, Tal, it started at 8. What, you found the porn mags? Is that how it went down?
Actually, I climbed into a treehouse. I moved 14 times as a kid, so our family was just kind of moving around a lot, which gave me really an opportunity to learn to become a cultural chameleon, you know, and just find the right mask for any given situation, because I didn't feel that by myself I was likable, you know, and so I just felt like, well, I got to portray an image, and so got lots of opportunities because I knew in a couple of years I'd get a big do-over. If it didn't work out, you know, but we moved to Atlanta, Georgia. I met the guys in the neighborhood at 8 and, you know, was invited to the inner sanctum of boydom. You know, I mean, to be invited into the treehouse, you know, you have been accepted.
Yeah.
And, I climbed into this treehouse and these guys, had older brothers who had wallpapered the treehouse with porn. So I got up in that treehouse and the feeling, yeah, I'll never forget it. And, you know, it was when I was 8, I'm 43. I can still tell you what I was wearing that day.
Really?
Yeah, it was just an intense dopamine rush in the brain. The chemical reaction was just amazing. And so I, you know, never forgot it. And it just kind of became a pattern in my life. Whenever I didn't feel good or whenever I felt rejected or whenever I felt pain, I would go to that treehouse. And so it really is a recurring pattern where there was pain, there was porn. It's just the way it went.
Hmm. So this obviously turned into a way to medicate for you. We all medicate in different ways.
Right.
Yours was pornography, and last time we talked to him,
yep.
we sort of said,
definitely.
Look, these two things go together, pornography and masturbation, and that was whatever the biochemical thing happens, that was the way you were able to kind of get through whatever junk you were going through. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely right, and it becomes a substitute for intimacy. We all crave intimacy. We want to be accepted for who we are. The cruel trick of addiction is that you're never going to be accepted for who you are because you're not ever who you really are with anybody. You know, you wear a mask. And Drew, I mean, it's one of my major gripes. I think it's just what people do in the church. So many people coming into church on Sunday got their shiny happy mask on, and none of them are going to get real with you. None of them are going to tell you that they're struggling with anything because they can't afford that. Because, well, I'm supposed to be a Christian. I'm supposed to be happy all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I certainly experienced that when I said to that group at the breakfast, you know, boy, it sure was hard not looking at porn on my laptop in the room. And they just, those shiny happy masks, they just kind of looked down at their food and got real quiet, you know?
Yeah, and you know, you get behind that stuff and you find out it's kind of like a movie set. You know, it looks like a real building, but get behind it and it's just a couple of raggedy 2x4s holding the thing up.
Folks, maybe just a reminder, or not a reminder, but just to let you know, Tal and I and Tim, we're gonna cut through the mustard here in the next 15 minutes and really talk about this issue. So if you've got young ones around and you think this might not be appropriate for them, just shut the radio off, come back after 4 o'clock, and you can listen online later in the week to this interview by yourself. So there's your warning, fair warning there, folks. Tal, where did it go? I mean, we started with the clubhouse and the wallpaper that was the porn mags and pictures and whatever else, but it escalates because the law of diminishing returns means that once something turned you on, eventually you got to ramp that up for it to turn you on again.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And so the porn, you know, becomes more and more extreme. And, you know, but for a long time, it was just whatever I could find. You know, I mean, when I was 8, there wasn't the availability, you know, that there is now for an 8-year-old. And so it was just kind of looking at magazines and bookstores or, you know, just regular bookstores, whatever I could find, because I wasn't allowed into the, you know, the other bookstores yet.
Right.
So at 8, you know, I'm looking at whatever I could find. And as, you know, as I got older and, you know, found more, and then I got sexually active, because you're thinking, well, let me put this into practice. I'm learning all this stuff. And so you start, you know, you start putting that into practice and getting involved with things. And so I, you know, I got very sexually active at a very early age, looked at an awful lot of porn, but porn kind of went by the wayside as I got sexually active. Then finally, you know, I just went through a string of relationships, you know, and that's really kind of not fair to call them that. Because I lied to everybody I ever knew. I mean, there wasn't anybody in my life I had an honest, intimate relationship with. Because, again, I didn't think I could have that. You know, and so, you lie to these girls to get them to go to bed with you, and then after it's over, you feel awful because they didn't have sex with who I really am. They had sex with a lie, and so this just feels awful. And so then I feel bad and feel shame, and shame drives all addiction. I don't care what it is. And this is why it's such a downward spiraling cycle. You feel such shame about it, but the shame drives you to go find what you think is intimacy again. And so you just go through it again. And it's absolutely awful. And then I met the girl that, that would become my wife, and I just thought, man, I really, there's something really special about her, and I don't want to lie to her. I certainly don't want to cheat on her, because I never had a relationship that I was faithful to. And, but I thought, this one, you know, she's different. I don't want to do that with her. And then, I was in Atlanta and moved to San Diego and dated with me in San Diego and her in Atlanta. And I thought, okay, I'm not going to cheat on her. And then I heard about this new thing called the internet.
Oh, yeah.
And that there was porn there. And I went, hey, fantastic. That's not adultery. That's not cheating. This will be great.
It's the lesser of two evils, right? That's what we think.
Exactly right. And so I bought a computer with the sole purpose of getting on the internet to find porn.
Wow.
And so I got the computer, and this is when you had to, I was that guy. There was not a way in the world you were going to see my car out in front of an adult bookstore. You know, and I was like, I can't go in there. That'd just be too awful an experience. I was too shameful. I'm not going to go in there. So this is what so many do with the internet. They don't have to go do that. They don't have to see anybody. They can isolate, get on the internet. But this is when America Online was still charging for like every 15 minutes.
Oh yeah, and that's right.
So you're a complete bonehead. You're paying like $200 for one picture.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so because, well, geez, that would be awful and foolish to go into an adult bookstore, so I'll do this and, you know, pay an obscene amount of money for it. So I was doing that, and, you know, we did that for a long time, you know, and I thought I was very, very straight and sincere and honest, and I was such a great guy because I wasn't cheating on Teresa. Then we got married, and because I thought, like every addict does, I'll get married. That'll fix it. Yeah, marriage fixes no problem. Marriage takes whatever problem you've got and puts it on steroids.
There's a bumper sticker right there, Tal. You got to print that puppy.
Yeah, and so so I'm sitting there, and you think this will be great, and because as a sex addict, you think I'll get married. I'll have all the sex I want whenever I want. That also is wrong. So I thought, man, this will be great, and then you find out it doesn't work that way. And so suddenly you find yourself going back to pornography. The reason you're not having an active sex life when you're married as a sex addict is you can't have sex without intimacy. But what you believe sex is intimacy. And so the whole relationship is a lie, and so there's not going to be a fulfilling sex life there. It's not going to happen.
Did you get busted? Like, did your wife find out about all this eventually?
Oh, several times.
Right.
You know, and, you know, she would find stuff, and she'd find stuff on the computer, and I would just stone cold Bill Clinton, you know, no, I did not download that poem. no, not me, somebody else. I don't know. A ghost came in the house. Maybe it's your brother-in-law. You know, he's been in here. And the thing about addicts is we tend to find and marry codependent enablers. It's just kind of this sick, twisted trick, you know, and so we need them, and they, for whatever reason, are attracted to us. It's all how we grow up in our family systems. And so I found a codependent enabler, and, you know, she would eventually just stop, you know, asking me about any one particular event because she knew I was going to continue to lie to her face or do what we all do in that situation as addicts, and that's go on the offense and make them feel crazy for asking us.
Yeah, Tim and I could probably look at each other and shake our head and go,
yep, been there, done that.
Ding, 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 got that. Tal, what would you say was the lowest point of this whole addictive cycle in your life?
The lowest point for me was I was a regional sales manager for the Far East at the time. I was an international business, and I took my last trip out there. And the business culture in Asia is very, very different. You know, out there, customers tend to lavish sales representatives with gifts instead of the other way around. And their concepts of gifts are also somewhat different. Very often, you know, I would come back to my room after a night of long dinners, and there would be a knock at the door. And it would be a very attractive female. and she would say, you know, hi, I'm a gift for you tonight from Mr. So-and-so. And they would just come walking in because no one ever tells them no. And that happened to me a lot, and I was able to always send them away.
Really?
Which was just God's grace at that point in my life. My last trip, I came back to my room, and she was already in my room.
Right.
And, you know, she was, not wearing much of anything, and she just came over to me, and I'm just going along, because I was stressed. I'd had a bad day. I was all in the addictive cycle, and I let that get too far. I didn't let it go really far, but I let it go too far.
Yeah.
And I just was beside myself. I could not believe I did that, because it was the one thing. Even while we were dating, I said, I will never, ever do that. And I convinced myself that looking at porn is not cheating.
Right.
Which is stupid and wrong, but it's what I thought. And Jesus makes clear in the Sermon on the Mount, it's not so much what you've done, it's what you think about. It's the condition of your heart I'm concerned with.
Yeah.
It's not behavior modification. The gospel's never been about behavior modification. It's about heart transformation. But as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. I thought about a lot of porn and a lot of sex, and that came out, and I made a tragic, horrific mistake. And I got her out of the room and came home and just never said a word about it. But that was the lowest point for me. And I had such a hard time. I never really got over that and held that for a couple of years. That was right before starting seminary, by the way.
I was chatting the other day to somebody, and we were talking about extramarital sex, and this particular person has been divorced for about 9 years, and she met up with somebody else and sort of said, we're both adults, rationalization and justification, yada yada yada. She said, what do you think about that whole scenario? And I said, you have the freedom to sin. You also have the freedom not to sin, but you have the freedom to sin. I'm not justifying it. As long as you're ready for the hounds of heaven afterward, that guilt thing is going to go down. It's coming. So you just have to make your choice, et cetera, et cetera. And we forget that God cares about us so much that he chooses to convict us afterwards. And I remember one particular time, Tal, back in my day when I was just being the jerk of all jerks, I remember one time afterwards I didn't feel guilty, and that scared me more than everything else.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It happens a lot. The individual thing, you may not feel guilty about an individual circumstance of acting out, but it's what you said is right. The hounds of heaven are going to come after you. I love the parable of the prodigal, but you've got this picture of the father waiting at the gate for the prodigal to come home. But what we don't see is that our God is a father that waits for you while he chases you at the same time.
Well said. Very well said. Tal, you confessed everything to your wife, Teresa?
Yeah, sure did. I got into seminary, was in a counseling class that I put off until the last possible semester that I could, because I'd read the syllabus and I looked at the books, and there was chapters on adultery and pornography. I'm going, oh crap, because my wife went to all my classes with me.
Wow.
And I'm like, I'm not going to have her in there talking about this because I won't be able to handle it. but I put it off as long as I could, and we sat there. And the professor began to, give us statistics about how prevalent this is and how big it is, because every addict thinks, I'm the only one. I'm the only guy with this level of issue with this. And while I was making good money as a sales rep, I wasn't making $97 billion a year, so obviously I had some help out there.
Yeah.
But I started to see how prevalent it was, how prevalent it is in ministry, how prevalent it is inside the church. But the great thing was, that God used that to educate my wife as well. And so Teresa was seeing all this and hearing about it. And she began to talk to me and say, hey, babe, if this has ever been a problem with you, and she knew it had because she caught me several times. If this is a problem with you, we can get help. We can get through that. And it was a moment of undoing my entire lifelong programming.
Wow.
Of I'm unlikable. If you really knew who I am and where I've been and what I've done, you wouldn't be in the same zip code with me.
Yeah.
You know, and so all of that, you know, started to, you know, break loose a little bit. And I confessed to her and experienced for the first time in my life, you know, actual genuine intimacy, being loved for who I am, being accepted for who I am, all of me, what's good about me and what's awful about me. And when we got into a counseling process, and because she had issues, because there was a reason we were attracted to each other.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, there's a reason codependents find find addicts and vice versa. And so we both did a lot of work in individual counseling and then counseling together. And through that, you know, really founded Tapestry of Hope and got into this ministry. And I'm at a men's retreat now with a large church down here in the Atlanta area. And I just got done doing about an hour and a half seminar on porn with these guys. And, you know, and I got guys lined up wanting to talk to me because, you know, they want to confess. They want to talk. And they know, well, holy cow, here's the first time there's somebody safe, you know, to talk to.
You and I are going to have probably multiple conversations over the next number of years. We resonate strongly with so many things. You know, a guy who you should get on your show, maybe you've already done that in the 4 hours that you've been rocking on the radio. Yeah, you got to get.
I've forgotten how many guests I've had on by now.
You got to get Brian Duncan on. You know him?
No.
Brian Duncan.
I know who he is, but I you know.
Yeah.
I've only done this 4 hours. I don't have the celebrity connections you do.
But you got to get him on because he is wired the same way that we all are. You know, he's got a crack in his love tank the size of San Francisco, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's because I was adopted. I don't know what your deal is. But, you know, this not feeling liked or not feeling lovable, or if somebody really knew who I was, it's the shame cycle.
Yeah.
It's the crack in the love tank. You can get a bunch of love, but it just seems to seep out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, for me it was, you know, a lot. What I find with a lot of guys that I work with and girls that I work with, this is something that people don't realize. 40% of the internet porn traffic now is females.
Come on.
Yeah.
Wow. Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, so it's a big growing problem. And what I'm finding, Drew, time and time and time again, it comes down to a real gaping father wound. You know, it's so often goes to dad. And for me, it did, you know, and I know, you know, now that my dad really did love me, but as a kid, I didn't feel that. He was addicted to work and he was just never around. And, you know, but when he was, you know, he had this parental philosophy that said, I'm never going to let you win, you know, at anything. But so when you beat me, it'll be honest, you know, and, you know, you can go, you know, that makes some sense until it's a, you know, 6 foot guy playing basketball with an 8-year-old who's rocking about 210 and began to fall apart. And there was this one day he and I were playing on the driveway and he just, I don't know if he had a bad week or what, but he wouldn't let me get a shot off. And he would just knock it out of the sky. And after about 20 minutes of that, I just broke. And I just collapsed on the driveway and started crying. And so, you know, so there I was sharing honest emotion. And my dad went to the shrub where he just launched my last attempt, grabbed the basketball, and he said, "You are such a baby, and I don't even like you right now."
Wow.
And he threw the basketball, hit me dead in the face. And he walked in the house and never said a word about it. And so when my nose came back from Cleveland, I got up and I went to the treehouse because it made me feel better.
Yeah.
They accepted me. They were always smiling. They were glad to see me. And that's the pattern, you know. And I felt like, well, my dad, who was supposed to love me, doesn't. Not only does he not love me, he doesn't even like me. And when I shared my true emotion and true feelings, that got shut down.
Hmm.
And so I learned I can never do that. You know, and therein starts the cycle. And because it happens to us, we learn 85% of our coping mechanisms by the time we're 8 years old. I learned
scary
an addictive
stat.
Coping mechanism, and off I went.
Tal, we've got to get you back again. We've just completely run out of time here with you.
Gotcha,
but
man.
But talprincelive.com is the website, talprincelive.com. You got to tune into the show, especially if you have the Sirius satellite thing going there. And you know what, man? I appreciate your heart. I appreciate your vulnerability. That's something I treasure a lot in other people, and it makes the rest of us feel safe around you. So just thanks for letting the rest of us in on your journey.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, I appreciate it. I mean, here's the thing, man. it's biblical. You know, I mean, Paul says we boast in our weakness so the power of God is glorified and more magnified. God didn't save any of us because he's got good taste.
Well, that's for sure. You get a big amen there, brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Amen.
All right, Tal. Well, listen, buddy, we'll catch up again soon. We'll probably talk this week because I guess I'm coming on your show next Sunday night. Also with me that night will be William P. Young, the author of The Shack. So maybe you get two for the price of one.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, and I'm used to it by now because people are clamoring to come on Tal Prince Live.
You're a champion, Tal. Champion. Thanks, mate. Good to chat with you.
All right, man. Thanks. God bless you guys.
Take care, man.
You
take
too.
Care. Good guy. Man, that's good, eh? That, I mean, you cut it open, it's raw, it's real, and...
Yeah, and I think people need to realize, I mean, that's every addiction, not just pornography. You know, you were talking drugs, alcohol.
Yeah.
It's all filling that void, that love tank crack that you were talking about.
Exactly. All right, another short break on the show. And when we come back, the one and only John Tesh joins us. So stay with us, folks.
Want to find out who's on the Drew Marshall Show next week? Sign up for our weekly email updates online at drewmarshall.ca.